irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Marvin Smith. Alan, the other host of the show, will not be with us today. He is working on a film, and it was called into production at the last minute. And you know how they say in show business, the show must go on, as we're going to go forward with this show. Each week, this show will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, outright entertain you, while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in a constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. With each of us having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family and mine mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. And we will continue to bring you some of these incredible, talented, and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. I am excited today that the guest that we're having on, and her name is Claudette Sutton. And let me tell you a little bit about Claudette so we kind of get a backdrop of what's going on. She has a new book out, and it's called Farewell Alapro. And very interesting, as we talk about a time today, we think about in society and global issues, national issues, race relations, kind of that whole mix, religion relations. And her new book, looking at the excerpts that I've had a chance to read, is very dynamic and insightful. But let me tell you a little bit about Claudette. As a young mother living in Santa Fe, Claudette founded Tumbleweeds, kind of fitting for the environment, right? Santa Fe, New Mexico, Tumbleweeds, an award-winning publication that for about almost 20 years has expanded its role into several city families. As a quarterly magazine, a newspaper, it has grown. And our vision of providing a community resource to help her neighbors face and embrace the challenges of parenting. So it is no coincidence that family is a central focus of her new memoir and the work that has been the driving force of Claudette Sutton's professional life. Claudette grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., among a family of Syrian Jews. When a big city beckoned, she moved to New York, where she earned a bachelor's degree from the New School of Social Research, living in close proximity to another side of her extensive family. She built a deep understanding of the Jewish exodus from Syria that formed the backdrop for her new book. Claudette, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, if you could, interesting. Maybe Claudette, before we move on to the book, how was the weather in New Mexico?
Oh, it's beautiful today. It's sunny, and we've got blue sky with just a few wisps of clouds across it. We're kind of ready for snow, but it's not ready for us yet. So we're enjoying a late fall in the meantime.
As you say, enjoy it while you can, because once the snow comes, it's there, and I guess a little different than being on the East Coast, where when the snow finally drops, it's there for the next 5 months.
Yeah, it doesn't tend to last that long here, but we do get more snow than people expect because we're up in the mountains, 7,000 feet, so we can get a pretty good winter. But actually, we're hoping for that this year because it's been so dry.
Yes. Well, anyway, what I'd like to do is I have a few questions for you in reference to your new book, and
sure.
It's a very interesting, looking at the excerpts that I had a chance to go through. it's interesting, it's very interesting dynamic. But, you know, just a few questions. Barely 70 years ago, in pronounce the city again.
Aleppo. Aleppo, Syria, yes.
Aleppo, Syria. Now, where is Aleppo in this for the listeners so they have an idea when proximity when you talk about Syria?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Yeah, Aleppo is in the northwest corner of Syria, fairly close to the Turkish border. It's actually the largest city in Aleppo, although Damascus is the capital, but it's a large city in the northwest, and it's a very Mediterranean climate. They get some cool evenings in the winter, but not much snow. Probably like where you are in LA, but a little more, maybe a little rainier, a little more of a Mediterranean wet climate than that.
Okay. At least that gives the listeners an idea of kind of backdrop of what we're sharing here. So, you know, I would say to say barely 70 years ago in Aleppo, Syria, young Jewish, Christian, and Muslim students went to school together. How has that changed and why?
Oh, it's changed so much since my father was growing up that it's hard to imagine. And as I was doing the research to put the book together and gathering stories from my dad, it was hard to believe how different things had been back then. And then, of course, when I first started talking to my dad for this book several years ago, things were not nearly as bad as they are in Syria right now, where this civil war has been going on almost 4 years, and it's just horrific. When my dad was growing up in Aleppo, he actually went to school with Jews and Christians and Muslims in the same school, in the same classrooms. And they hung out together in school, pretty much went to their own homes in the evening. You know, it wasn't so much that the different religious groups were mingling outside of school, but they were able to go to school together. The men did business together. It was a way of life with a kind of tolerance and respect that had been going on for thousands of years. And unfortunately, that has changed so dramatically now, it's hard to even get our heads around. One of the things I want people to get out of this book is just the fact that it used to be different from how it is now, so that we can realize that what we see there now in Syria with war and fighting among ethnic groups and even among, unfortunately, among the different Muslim groups, is not the way it's always been over there, and hopefully not the way it will always be.
Yeah, well, we always talk about, you know, civil unrest and civil war and you know, on one end of the spectrum when we look at history, but then on the other hand, we look at when there has been this time of rest, when people come together with cultures and enjoy and you know, we always, for me, it's the thought of, and as a believer as well, it's like, you know, is that time going to ever come back? Or, you know, world peace, what do we need to do? Or will there ever be world peace? And so I think the book, you know, Farewell Aleppo, it's applicable to this time because, you know, a lot of people are just wondering, you know, how do we get back there? You know,
Now
how aware were you growing up of your Syrian culture heritage, and how does that affect you today?
Growing up, I knew, I suppose, the bits and pieces that we know oftentimes within our home. Like, I knew that our foods were a little different from the other families in my neighborhood, even the other Jewish friends that I grew up with. They ate what we think of as the typical American Jewish foods, matzo ball soup and noodle kugel and, you know, these kinds of things. We had stuffed grape leaves and tabbouleh and Middle Eastern foods. My father and grandparents on my mother's side even spoke Arabic as the second language in the home. So there were things that I knew about our cultural background in the home, but I really didn't know the bigger context, I suppose, of the history until I started writing this book and doing, you know, talking with my dad and then doing research and finding out that Aleppo had a Jewish community for over 2,000 years, a community that's gone from Aleppo now, but that lived there and had amazing accomplishments for that incredibly long period of time. That's the kind of thing, that was, I suppose, the backstory of our cultural background that I didn't know growing up, that when I learned it, felt like I'd just been, you know, given jewels in a treasure box. It was just a fascinating thing to learn. You know, and something that I hope, you know, people get when they read the book, that they learn that there's oftentimes more history in our own families than we have any idea of when we're growing up.
You know, and what you share to me reminds me of, I think about it as a young kid, kind of growing up in the, at the time was considered suburbs that, you know, through the migration of circumstances became, you know, an extended urban inner city and all the perils that go along with that. The gang elements and, you know, but, you know, when you're kind of growing up in it, you don't, you know, then I was an athlete and a student as well. So I knew everybody. And so even with the gangs, I go across town and I knew everyone. So it wasn't an issue.
Right.
Then as I got older and started looking at things, how things change, you know, we look at even from a global standpoint, I look at it, you know, from the same point, even we look at even these microcosms of cities within a city, you know, all of a sudden you can't go to this side of town, you can't wear these colors, you're going, wow. I mean,
yeah.
To me as a kid, I was so oblivious, but it was different then.
And it wasn't as extreme as it is now. You could be with different groups and it wasn't quite so dangerous and you weren't so as aware of differences maybe as people are now. That's very interesting, even here in America, how much that's changed.
Yeah, and it's just, I guess it's just a changing with times, but actually it was just interesting. And I think, too, as a kid, as we're growing up, we see things differently. And as we become adults, we become parents, I really believe it shifts our mindset and understanding. Because now as parents, now we have kids and we're looking at their well-being. And now I think we become more connected to history. And, there's that old saying that, sometimes you haven't lived until time has passed that you're able to reflect and have something to reflect back to go forward. And I think sometimes our youngsters are so, there's nothing in front of them. I mean, they haven't lived long enough to understand, and everything is, I hate to say this, you know, when you're young, it's all about me.
Well, but, you know, in thinking about answers, you know, the answers families can provide, I think when we can make our families, our children aware that what we see in front of us isn't the way it's always been. As you say, children are very self-centered. It's hard to realize that when you're growing up. But to get the reminders that things have been different in other ways, and therefore, you know, we can hold in mind at least a hope that they will be different again, that we can keep growing more peaceful and tolerant and working towards those things, even if in the moment it can seem pretty, you know, pretty unhopeful.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It gives us, I think, as we become adults, then we're looking at, it becomes our responsibility culturally to, you know, to give these lessons learned, you know, to our kids. They may not understand it, but it's giving them that backdrop as they continue to move forward. Then someday that I call it the aha moment happens. They go, oh, I got it.
Yeah. And to have that bigger picture than kids can often understand in the moment, but to have that context for it. I mean, it's interesting to me hearing you talk about your background, which is so different from mine or my father's, but, you know, similar questions, similar themes in terms of how life has changed and how our identity changes in the process of that. I think these are the kind of things we can be talking about in families and open up awareness of in our children.
Right. And one of the things that what has done for me at this point in my life, it's been years now that, you know, my whole life at this point is dedicated to going back into these environments and really looking at, to me, the essence of where the change has to come is education. So I have submitted myself and involved in education reform and then, looking at crisis intervention among youth and families that, you know, I really believe without having that foundational insight and education makes a difference how we perceive things forward. And if we don't catch kids young enough to plant the seeds, you know, what is there as they get, there's not, you know, I always say once they become adults, if we didn't do a great job foundationally as adolescents, mm-hmm. they're at a loss, and it's really hard. And I really believe these are some of the things I'm seeing in society today that, you know, I call the lost generation, where, you know, it became that certain segment of the population were not getting educated at the highest level. And, mm-hmm. you know, education, I believe, whether it's localized or globalized, is still paramount to how we perceive and how we interact as adults.
And one thing I think we can always do in families is family education, our heritage education. Because I think we see how important that is for building kids' sense of strength and resilience if they are aware of their heritage, even if it's not a complete picture. There's always gaps in what we understand and know about our family, but just to be aware that we had grandparents and great-grandparents who may have come from another country, who may have had a very different life than we did, and yet as we learn more about them, we see how much overlap there is, how much influence there is from the people in our past. I think that's another piece of education that we can do just within our own homes.
Well, I think, you know, I always say my family, where there's no history, there's no future. Mm-hmm. And it's that history building upon, whether it's small, you know, from lack of understanding, but history, you know, of family and culture. You know, and I think one of the things that I see today is even, you know, from that, when I say education, I'm not so much foundational or the traditional education of the academia. I mean, looking at even the social complex or constructs of, you know, what it is, you know, we start looking at emotional intelligence, looking at different cultures. I mean, because I really believe if you don't understand a culture, how can you be sensitive to its traditions if you don't understand it or know it? And we become, there's no tolerance. They're different than us, and, you know, as humans, I think from the behavioral side, if there's something that's not like us, then there's something wrong.
And even if we don't like what we find in our own past and heritage or our parents' background, knowing it is still a strength that we have.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be only because we've learned about the heroic and wonderful things that our family members have done. There can be some ugly things back there, too, but that's part of how our lives were shaped. And there's also a strength in knowing those stories.
Well, I believe that's what you just said. I call that resiliency. It's looking at all of it is what builds the character, not just one side of it, because one side can really taint the picture on how we perceive, you know, the issues forward. But you're right. So it is. It's looking at all aspects of the culture, coming on, looking at our history and embracing it.
Right.
But I always believe, too, it's those negative things that help us grow.
Mm-hmm.
So now, that being shared, I mean, when I think about your dad, I mean, okay, it's a long leap from Syria to in your town of
Aleppo.
Aleppo. Aleppo.
Yeah.
Small town, I can't say, I don't know, but the town of Aleppo to the United States and Washington, D.C., and maybe you could share, I mean, what brought on, why did your dad leave Aleppo?
Well, it was a decision that his father had made for him, actually, and just informed my dad that the decision had been made. It was a different time in the sense of these things not being discussed among parents and children. Just the parents would make a decision and tell the child. And in my father's case, the decision that was made was that his father wanted to get the family out of Aleppo because the life that I was describing to you about this going to school with Christians and Muslims and, you know, the respectful coexistence that they had, his father could see the writing on the wall that was coming to an end, that the Arabs in Syria were trying to get independence as a country. They were a protectorate of France at the time.
Okay.
And that when it became an independent country, life for Jews was likely to get more difficult. And they could see what was happening just across the border in Palestine as the country of Israel was coming into being. So his father had to find a way to get the family out. And the way that he came up with was to send his two oldest sons from Aleppo to Shanghai, China, of all places, because they had my grandfather had a brother, my father's uncle, had a business in Shanghai, exporting textiles from China to the United States. The uncle had been born in Syria, but was an American citizen by that point, and he had a business with the United States. So the plan was to send the two oldest boys. My father was 19 at the time, and his brother was 17, from Aleppo to Shanghai to work for their uncle, and then hopefully find a way to get from Shanghai to the United States. Now, the wrinkle in all of this was that when he sent them there, this was January of 1941, and the world was, we were at war, there was war going on in Europe at the time, but this seemed to be an opportunity that was the best available at the time to get them out of Syria. So my grandfather put the two oldest boys on a boat from Port Said, Egypt, which was not far from where they grew up in Aleppo, to Shanghai. So they were on a month-long ship by themselves around the world to Shanghai. And they arrived in February of 1941. Now, unfortunately, in that year, two things happened that interfered with the plan of Shanghai being the stepping stone to the United States. The first one was health. My father's brother became sick with tuberculosis and had to go back by himself to Syria.
Okay.
And then World War II broke out in the Far East. The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor in December of 1941. On December 7th, and on the morning of December 8th, they occupied Shanghai, and my dad found himself in an occupied city for the duration of World War II.
Wow.
So he ended up, I mean, this plan of leaving, you know, this very small, close-knit, kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It was a very Mediterranean life, very slow-paced way of life that they had back in Syria. Suddenly, he's in Shanghai, China, and one of the most international communities in the world at that point.
Wow!
By himself, because his uncle had to go back to the United States.
Wow.
So, Dad was essentially, you know, stranded alone in Shanghai for all of those years.
Well, mention this now. It's kind of interesting. I mean, you know. Was that unusual for Syrian Jews to be living and conducting business in China during, I mean, because it would have been during World War II, so that would have been interesting.
It was unusual. He was not alone there. He was alone in terms of people that he knew when he got there, but there was a community of Jews and Christians from Syria and Lebanon, and other Middle Eastern countries, India, Shanghai. Curiously enough, this is something another thing I learned in the course of doing this research. I didn't know this. Shanghai was an international city at the time. It had been opened up to outside development in the mid-1800s as a concession of the Opium Wars. So there was a lot of outside development going on there. So my father found that there was a Jewish community there. It was not anybody that he knew when he got there. So it was not, it was different from how they had lived and practiced in Syria. But there were other Jews and even Christians from Syria and Lebanon that my father became friends with that would get together. They had like a club that they would go to and play cards. And I love this part of my father's story. They hired a Chinese chef to make Middle Eastern foods for them, which, of course, they miss so badly. I think one of the hardest things when we leave home is leaving the foods that we're so familiar with. So they hired a Chinese chef or cook to make Middle Eastern foods for them. So at least they would have some taste of home while they were there. But Dad ended up living in Shanghai for 5 years by himself throughout World War II.
Wow. Wow, what an experience.
Yes, it really was.
in history.
And again, just thinking about families and how we are shaped by the things that happened in our families years ago, that was certainly an experience that shaped not only my dad's life, but ended up having implications for the life that he was able to establish in America and our lives. It was kind of a break, I suppose, in the continuity of life that he had had with his family back in Aleppo, where he was the oldest son, and there were all these expectations of what he was supposed to do in terms of setting an example for his younger brothers and sister and representing the family, you know, being all the burdens that go with being an oldest son. Suddenly he's living alone. And had to develop a very, very different part of himself, a much more independent, self-reliant part of himself.
Wow, this is interesting. Well, I mean, as I'm listening and I look at how culture is, all the similarities, you know, when you think about being raised as a youth or as a kid and then becoming an adult and looking back, and even when I look at, you know, from when I'm working with kids, and I look at, well, two things. I look at myself, as you were sharing about your dad, about, you know, it sometimes it wasn't what you thought you were going to do. This is what you told you were going to do. And, you know, my dad was the first generation college graduate. And so I grew up with the mindset, well, I would just share that, you know, I didn't have a choice. You're going to college. I don't know anything different because that's what I've been told the whole time I'm going to do. I didn't know there was a choice. And then when I had friends that were like, yeah, I don't know, maybe, maybe not, it was just interesting that the decision-making, but then it goes back to the family again, and it goes back to the value and what you understand and things of that nature. And that's interesting. Then I look at, too, when I work at, even working with some of the young kids today, as I take them to different places in a, you know, we're talking about places that are very close in proximity, but it's almost like, well, this is different. The food is different. And we're not, so, you know, we could be talking about cities away or even going to another state, and you get that whole cultural, the difference, you know. And I think part of learning and growing up is one thing that I had the opportunity to do as a youth. My parents, you know, I had three siblings, but we traveled a lot. So I had a chance to travel, I had a chance to see things. So that broadened my horizon and perspective of what life was or could be, which I could look at friends who were who didn't have that luxury of opportunity, and they became very narrow in their outlook and their scope on what life is. So you're right, it's shaping family. When you talk about answers for the family, and I like to think that this show that we have very interesting individuals on the show like yourself that can talk about, it's like storytelling, that people can hear things that they can pass it on, and they can even embrace, you know, things that are being shared in their own family or you know, and sharing it, because it's so dynamic.
It is dynamic. And, you know, my book, Farewell Aleppo, is about a very, very specific experience of my family, you know, coming from Aleppo, Syria to the United States.
Yeah.
That's not a specific experience that too many of my readers are going to share, other than my family members that read it. And yet, as you're saying, as you're talking, I realize we have so many of the same bigger questions in common of how we are shaped by the movement, the migration that our family has had to make, how we're shaped by our heritage compared to the choices that we make individually, how much our past really does shape who we are, and how important it is to know that past and be able to make the choices that we want to make with it. I mean, you know, Farewell Aleppo is about a very specific niche in the world, community in the world, but the bigger questions, that's why it's so fascinating to me to talk with people about the book. It touches often them. It's kind of a jumping off point for them to think about their own families, because so many of the issues are common to all of us.
Well, and as I was going through the, you know, looking at the excerpts and going through it, it did the same thing to me. It made me think about, you know, it made me look internally at my own family and migration and heritage and really, it's good.
It's different, and yet, you know, we start saying, ah, yes, but that's like in my family when blah, 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 you know, and that's very exciting to me, actually, to have that experience come out of people reading Farewell Aleppo, they're seeing in their own very, very different experiences similar questions to the ones that my dad dealt with and that I dealt with. I think part of why I gravitated towards writing the book was wanting to learn more about where I fit in this family that was not really like our other Jewish neighbors where I grew up outside of Washington, D.C., but was also somewhat different, pretty different from my cousins who grew up in Brooklyn in a much more Orthodox Syrian Jewish community. I had elements of being an insider and an outsider to those different communities, and I think that's a motivation that prompted me to explore the things that I did in writing the book.
Right, right. That's good. Okay, well, let me ask you this, and it was time.
Sure. Wow.
Time goes by so fast when you're having a good time, as they say. We're going to need to take a commercial break, but right before we go into a commercial break, one more question.
I'm just
so fascinated. Did your father find in America what he was looking for? I mean, because he finally went through this whole process and, you know, being occupied, the Japanese, you know, told in China during World War II, those 5 years, and finally coming to America. You know, that brings something up, coming to America. So
right. And did he find what he was looking for? He did. I would say he very much did, and at a cost. He has lived here now for almost 70 years since he got here, and he's been able to support a family here with a degree of religious, political, financial freedom that would not have been possible in Syria, especially after 1948 with the crackdown against Jews in Syria after the country of Israel was created. It would have been a very much more difficult life for the family in Syria. And there was a cost. I think those years of living away from his family broke a sense of connection that a continuity, I suppose, of connection that he had with his family back in Syria. And he didn't see his father again after leaving Syria. His father died before he was able to come to America. Two of his brothers died before they were able to get to America. So there was a tremendous satisfaction and victory in coming to America, and certainly also a sense of loss. Wow. A cost in the journey.
Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head. There's always, you know, when you look at the journey, I think about the settlers coming to America, and when we look at history, there's always, you know, you look at the pluses and minuses, but anytime you're pioneering, you're a pioneer, there's, you know, there's hardships that go along with it, but then the purpose was to make a better life, to make a better opportunity for your family.
Yes, and I think sometimes the implications of this migration that so many people experience in their families, we don't recognize those implications for many years, sometimes for generations, I think, just what
That's true.
Implications of immigration and migration are.
That is true.
Good and bad.
We're going to take a commercial break, and once again, this is Marvin Smith with Answers for the Family, and I'm here with our guest, Claudette Sutton, and her new memoir, Farewell
Aleppo.
Aleppo. Thank you very much. Hold on.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We are back. And our guest is Claudette Sutton. And Claudette basically is looking at her family migration, her heritage as a Syrian Jew, We're talking about the journey from Aleppo to America and what she has learned in the process. And now she is a mother and living in New Mexico and is doing some phenomenal work. And so we're going to continue our interview here. And Claudette, as we move on, what is the historical significance of Syria and Aleppo to the Jewish community and your own personal heritage?
Well, it's as if there are two Syrias in our family in terms of the cultural or personal heritage. Within our family, and the Syrian Jewish community in Brooklyn, New York right now, in the New York area, is over 70,000 people. So there's a huge Syrian Jewish community in this country, mostly in New York, but in some other cities as well. The traditions, the foods, even among the elders, the Arabic language, the ways of observing the holidays, all of these things are still very, very strong and very much as they were back in Syria compared to other American immigrant groups and other American Jewish groups that came from Europe and Russia. It's much more resistant to assimilation than other groups. Okay. There's a very strong, strong sense of Syrian Jewish of identity. But okay. To the country of Syria itself, there's no nostalgia or allegiance, unfortunately, because of the traumatic circumstances of leaving, many of them before 1948, but those who left after 1948 had much more difficult and traumatic and dangerous circumstances for getting out of Syria. So there's not a sense of connection or loyalty to Syria itself in our personal heritage, but to the traditions in the way of being Syrian Jews, that's an amazingly strong connection. So it's fascinating to me. It's a fascinating paradox that we, for generations after coming to America, identify as Syrian Jews, even decades after there has been a Jewish community in Syria. And I think, you know, as I was saying earlier, I realize how much we're all shaped by our heritage, even if that connection to the place that we come from has been broken.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting. So, let me ask you this then. You know, the themes of being an insider and an outsider, of belonging and not belonging, running through your book. I mean, that's kind of the theme when I look at through your book. Well, how do you experience these issues, you know, in your life? I mean, when kind of putting it in, bringing that all the way back to the close to the heart, you know, bringing it home, because you know you wrote the book, and you wrote this because you were compelled, and it, you know, so what's that theme? What is that insider outsider? What does that mean?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. I think I would say we all, to some extent, in this country, have a sense of being an insider and an outsider, because there is no one American thing, however much television might try to convey that or marketing. There's no one American identity, so we all have a combination from the background that we have. And for me, in my personal life, there was a sense of being, you know, very much mainstream American. I grew up in a suburban community outside of Washington, D.C. I went to public schools. You know, it was a very mainstream American life. And yet, in our home, we did some things differently from our neighbors. As I was mentioning earlier, we had different foods. We had, you know, we didn't have Yiddish expressions in the house, as a lot of Jewish families did. My grandparents would use Arabic expressions, Arabic insults sometimes. I mean, it's very, very colorful terms. So that made me a little bit different from my other friends at school. And then when I would go visit my extended family in New York, most of them kept kosher. They observed the kosher dietary rules, and they observed Orthodox Jewish practices. We were not so strict in our practice of Judaism, so we had a much more secular American life. So I think in a way I was I was a full-blooded member, and I write about this in Farewell Aleppo, I was a full-blooded member of that Syrian Jewish community of my family, but I was also much more mainstream American than my aunts and uncles and cousins that lived in New York. And I think that question, being the insider and the outsider, sort of being part of that culture, sort of not, you know, being part of an American mainstream culture, I think all of those things fed into writing my book, Farewell Aleppo. And I think, I don't know, it was just another thought I was going to add there, that I think for all of us, the reality is more complex than this melting pot notion that we have. It's like we're in this big pot, but we have some of the flavors of our heritage, some of the flavors of the culture that we grow up in, you know, which might be an American city or an American suburb or American farm. You know, we have the American life that we have and the culture that's behind us. And all of those things come together to shape our sense of who we are. And I suppose those were, I mean, the original impulse to write the book was my dad wanting me to help him put his story on paper of how he got to America. And wow. Then what made it become a bigger project for me than just a family project to turn it into a book was first of all, finding out how fascinating that Syrian Jewish history was and how extensive it was. You know, as I said, that there were 2,000 years of Jewish community in Aleppo. I didn't know that growing up. But also the questions that I got a chance to explore in terms of my own place in that community. That's what made it grow from being a little project to a book.
Wow. You know, I am just amazed. I'm looking at the clock. And I can't believe we're down to 6 minutes before the show ends. It's just, Claudette, what happened to the time?
What happened? Uh-oh. Am I talking too much?
No. What I said, that was the point.
No, I know. It is. There's a lot to talk about, and it is real. I mean, and family identity is so interesting to me. You know, as I said, that notion that, oh, I make who I am. I created myself. And then when we start learning about our family, we realize, how it's so much more complicated than that.
Okay, what I'm going to try to do is squeeze in a couple things before this show ends. And I got like 5 minutes, and what I want to do, I definitely want to, you know, I have a call-in question from a listener that I definitely want to get to. And I have one question, and I'm going to read it, and maybe you can answer it at the end, because I'm going to read both, and then you can maybe between the two toggle back and forth, okay? What message do you hope readers will take away from your book? Hold that thought. Now, one of our calling questions. I was deeply moved by the message in your book. I was raised in a small town in New England and remember how people from many walks of life, faith, and ethnic backgrounds work together so peacefully. When I go back home, that dramatically has shifted. People are less involved with their neighbors, and you feel a great deal of separation. Does your book tell us or gives us hope in addressing these issues?
I sure hope it does.
Does your book, does it speak into those issues? You've been speaking about it the whole time on the show. And what message do you want the readers to take away?
Well, boy, that question from the listener is a fascinating one because, again, it's such a different background than the one that I'm writing about in my book, and yet it's the similar question. How could life have changed so much? The message that I want people to take away from the book is what we see isn't the way it has to be and isn't the way it has always been. That if we can look at a place like Syria, which is one of the most violent places on the planet right now, and realized that barely 70 years ago, it was a place where Jews and Christians and Muslims went to school together and worked together and lived side by side with one another. That's not ancient history. That's not a million years ago. That's barely 70 years ago.
Right.
If it's that recent, we do have hope we can live that way again. And I want readers to take away a notion that we may not see that hope in the news reports and death toll and numbers of displaced people that we're reading about right now. But if we can have a sense of the history we can have a deeper sense of possibility. And I think that's what the call-in question was also about. Even from this very different community in New England, they're seeing a similar kind of change. I certainly hope they do take away a sense of hope, that even just by knowing and having a broader picture, we can have a sense, we can have a place in ourselves for that change when it can come along.
Right. Yes, that's right. And I think here's one more question that came in. I think it kind of fitting to kind of top off the show. It says, I am an Israeli who has been living in the U.S. for many years. After reading the review on Alan's or on Answers for the Family's website, I purchased your book. I have to say that I cannot put it down.
Thank you.
It says, many of us do believe that we need to reestablish a brotherhood between all people.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you feel that way about that sense of brotherhood. Other people have told me specifically from that part of the world too, from Israel, and a book actually that I'm reading right now about Israel, the sense of Arabs and Jews together before Israel was created and even in the earlier days of Israel. And the reality is that right now there are still people, children. Let me switch the example a little bit. There was an article that I just read about the schools in Aleppo, and that, you know, I see these videos of these damaged buildings, and it's hard to remember that there are still thousands of people living in this city and large numbers of children that are still going to school, and they still look like kids. They're still full of that, you know, bright-eyed, childlike look that kids have on their faces.
Yeah.
And yet, but they're going to school in buildings that aren't being heated, that don't have books, that are being neglected.
Right.
So if we keep in mind that people are still living in these places,
yeah,
then our commitment to maintaining that hope and preserving and working towards a sense of possibility becomes a million times stronger.
That is great.
It's not just the destroyed buildings, which is tragic enough in itself, because there are architectural treasures that are gone, but it's people that are still there.
Yes. Well, you know, Claudette, we could go on, and we have come to the end of the show, and I just want to thank you for your time and your commitment to the things that you do for a community and family. And once again, our guest is Claudette Sutton, and if you'd like to reach her and you'd like to get your book, you could go to her website, which is www.claudettesutton, which is her name, claudettesutton.com. And if you'd want to find out more about her, just go to her website, and which could take you to all of the links and things that she's involved with. Once again, this is Answers for the Family. And Claudette, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk with you. And if people want to order the book, it's available at your local bookstore and online and in ebook and print format. It's Farewell Aleppo, My Father, My People, and Their Long Journey Home.
Good. Well, have a good day, and thank you very much, Claudette.
Thank you, Mormon. It was so great to talk to you.
Yes.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.